Our next presenter will be Dr. Eric Henley. Dr. Henley is a family and public health physician and chief medical officer at North Country Healthcare, a community health center based in Flagstaff, Arizona, and also 14 sites across northern Arizona. Previously, Dr. Henley worked at the University of Illinois Regional Medical School in Rockford, where he was the chairman of family and community medicine. Earlier in his career, Dr. Henley worked for Indian Health Services, a Hopi reservation in Albuquerque, New Mexico. He has published over 20 peer-reviewed journal articles and regularly presents at national conferences. I'm pleased to introduce to you Dr. Henley.
Thank you. Good afternoon. And I'm glad to be next to someone from Ohio. They're the swing state, and I'm hoping for their vote next week in the right way. Thanks for having us. I'm with Amanda Gay, who's in the front row here, who's the director of community health, and we're going to be sharing the presentation today. We'd like to talk a little bit about community health centers. I mean, many of you may know about them, but we want to make sure you understand who we are as organizational entities and why we think that community health centers are really a great partner either to lead or to partner with to do a lot of community prevention projects. So we want to say something about CHCs, something about how CHCs get connected to the social determinants of health and can influence them, and then talk about a project that we're doing currently in Flagstaff called Hermosa Vita. So just to be sure we're all on the same page, for those of you who don't know, a federally qualified health center, which is what many but not all CHCs are, is actually a private nonprofit 501c3. It's not actually a federal entity. We have a grant from the federal government through the agency HRSA. And the grant makes up a small portion of our budget. In North Country's case, it's probably about 10%. And it helps to defray the cost of taking care of the uninsured. The requirements of a 330 grantee like us is that we have to have a community governing board. Half of them have to be patients in the practice. And in our case, they represent many of the communities that we serve, although not necessarily all. We have to take care of all people who come in, regardless of whatever demographic and income measure you look at. We have a lot of reporting requirements to the federal government, both in terms of the kinds of patients we see, the diagnoses we see, quality indicators. It's actually fairly demanding. We have to do it every year, and the data is collected and aggregated and reported by HRSA. We get our medical malpractice through the federal government, but as a requirement of doing that, we have to apply every year to get it renewed, and we have to meet certain criteria from the federal government in order to renew it. So it's a real two-way street being an FQHC. You get some advantages, you get some grants, and you get malpractice coverage, but you have to do a lot of things to keep earning that. North Country is an interesting community health center in that it's a kind of a rural network, a pretty rural network. I don't know how many of you are familiar with northern Arizona, but when you leave Phoenix and drive north, you leave most of the population of Arizona behind. And which a lot of us up north think is good, but we are in a very rural area. From one end, Havasu and Bullhead all the way on one end, which is the west end, is against Colorado and Nevada, against the Colorado River. From that end to the other end of our system is 380 miles, a lot of it on I-40, if you've ever driven I-40, near the old Route 66. And so I used to say, I tell a lot of providers that we hire and recruit, it's about 380 miles and maybe four traffic lights. We have a diversion for those of you who go to the Grand Canyon. We actually have a clinic in the Grand Canyon National Park. So this is a very rural, geographically dispersed network. So this is another thing I kind of want to put out there about CHCs. Although there's probably like 1,300 in the country, and many of you may already maybe be in one or work with one or whatever. Many of them have multiple sites. They're all a little bit different, and they're varying sizes. We're a big but not huge CHC, and we do a lot of stuff, and we do a lot of stuff that isn't traditional medical care kinds of stuff, which a lot of people associate with community health centers. So we do typical medical care. Primary care, we have a lot of OBGYN in Flagstaff, which is the biggest community, and you know, peds and some behavioral health, not enough, but some. We have a school-based health program in Flagstaff with a mobile clinic. But we also have lots of community health programs for the uninsured. We have programs for cancer screening, for maternal child health home visiting, for sexual assault exams, for Title X family planning, radiation screening for people downwind. These are programs a lot that Amanda's department runs, and they make up a significant chunk of what we do that's both in and outside of the clinic. We also do a ton of health professions education. Docs, DOs, MDs, nurse practitioners, PAs, dental hygienists, dental residents, pharmacy residents. So we have a lot of that going on, again, all across our system and some of the Indian Health Service and tribal sites, because Northern Arizona, we in Flagstaff kind of right on the southwest corner of the Navajo Reservation, about 30 miles away. We do some research, not a lot, but some. We have research partners. We're connected to a group in Chicago, and we do some research. We have an electronic health record. We, you know, working on PCMH development. We have this medical legal partnership with a lawyer in one of our clinics. My point about this is really to say that a lot of your CHCs that you may have in your neighborhood are doing lots of stuff that isn't necessarily traditional medical care, and they're really interesting entities to potentially partner with to do community kinds of projects of all kinds. We'll talk about a particular one, but mostly it's to give you that context. So historically, community health centers have been very involved, not again all, but as a general sense, in thinking about the health of the population that they serve, the communities that they serve, not just the people who come into the front door into the clinic. Looking at all kinds of, you know, the social determinants of health, be they social, economic, or environmental factors. Our providers, docs, and others often who work in our organizations recognize that there are social determinants of health going on in the background of the lives of a lot of the people they take care of, but they don't really, you know, we're not trained to take care of that or know how to address that. And I think that's the point about getting involved and looking outside of the building. Many CHCs are already involved in one way or another with doing stuff in the community that's not in the typical healthcare realm. It was interesting because I went to a session earlier today, I don't know if any of you did, on primary care and access, and Jeremy Cantor, who's from the Prevention Health Institute, which is in Oakland, was talking about stuff that they're doing, which has a lot to do with social determinants of health and safety net organizations like CHCs. And he gave two really perfect examples of how safety net entities get involved in this kind of things. One was in L.A. where the providers recognized a spate of illnesses that kids were getting, rashes and hard-to-control asthma, and actually took the time and interest to try to map what was going on, how to explain that. And they realized it had the connections, the common thread was housing. But the housing was kind of dispersed. But they went actually farther and realized it was two landlords' housing that was really the culprit here and how they were basically slumlords. And they actually instigated a media campaign and a marketing campaign to get them to change things. And that's an example of how CHCs have the potential going from the inside to the outside and back again. There's an organization called the Institute for Alternative Futures, which published an interesting report recently called Community Health Centers Leveraging the Social Determinants of Health, and they talked about what CHCs can do to partner with outside entities to address these things. Some of the points they make about community health centers is that we typically partner a lot, that our leadership is important in developing any effort to address social determinants, that we're very much tied into what's locally acceptable or doable, and that we have to work with others. We ourselves don't have the resources, nor do we have that interest to work alone. We really want to work with others. We also scramble, like many of you probably do, to get funding for different kinds of things. Our efforts are not usually formally evaluated. They're usually in the form of anecdotal stories like the one I just told. And often they're triggered by what comes to us in our clinical or other work and what stimulates our thinking. And in the case of Hermosa Vida, which Amanda's going to talk about, a lot of our thinking was because of a concern about childhood obesity, which a lot of people have a concern about. So I'm going to stop.
All right, so I'm just going to present a little bit about the Hermosa Vida project, which was a project that we had the opportunity to implement in Flagstaff, and it was specifically focused in the Sunnyside neighborhood, which is the neighborhood in Flagstaff that's the most diverse in all of our neighborhoods, and it has the lowest socioeconomic status and the highest rate of families with one parent. And then what happened was that we had this luxury in public health that doesn't happen very often. Through the Kresge Foundation, we had a 9-month planning grant to focus on the social determinants of health and any single health topic that the neighborhood was most interested in looking at. And so we had this chance to really look at what the community wanted to address and what were the social determinants or upstream variables that were affecting those issues. And so what they presented to us was this opportunity to have a CHC-led effort that involved collaborative partners and looked at engaging existing assets and the safety net in the response. And so this is going to just tell you a little bit about how we went through that process and then what the demonstration project ended up looking like. So the approach, of course, was this CHC-led community-engaged effort. And some of the partners that we engaged in the process, the Community Health Center. So as Eric said in that AIF report, they really talked about having CHC leadership as one of the really important elements, and I can't stress this enough, just because our Community Health Center's leadership found value in this, it really made the world of difference. And then the city, in particular the Parks and Recs departments, the county health department, the university, and in the university, it was the Department of Anthropology and the Interdisciplinary Health Policy Institute. I wasn't sure I was going to be able to spit that out. And then the neighborhood association, different hospital entities, community groups, the school district, businesses, community gardens, and then engaged food security group. And the method we used was that we worked with the Department of Anthropology, like I said, and they identified community members to be trained up as ethnographers. And we went through and used a model called RARE, or Rapid Assessment Response and Evaluation, which is a quick community-engaged process that really just sorts out what the key issues are from a community's perspective by using community process. And the community ethnographers identified these different methods that they would do to find the research. And what they settled on was to use focus groups, interviews, surveys, observations, social mapping. And then they were doing that on one side during a 6-week spurt during the summer of 2010. And on the other side, there were some students that were looking at evidence-based practice and evidence-based successes in other communities. And in the end, we overlapped those two, and we put the strategies up against what the research findings were, and then we went back to the community, and we told them, this is what we heard you say, and these are strategies we think will address what you said, and then we'd like you to vote on those. And so that's exactly what they did. They voted on those, and this is what we found. So the rapid assessment came out with, these were the themes that we really heard over and over again throughout the research process. They said that patient-physician communication was something that wasn't very successful. Many patients that were patients of the CHC found that they had unsatisfactory interactions with the physicians and with their providers in talking about wellness issues, in particular obesity. Other things they found were that access to fresh and healthy foods was an issue. And I should say that as part of this, during the summer of 2010 in Arizona, it was also the summer that SB 1070 came into play, and that was that immigration reform that so affects us all every single day. And I think that that really had a lot of impact on some of the findings that we had as far as fresh and healthy foods and safety and mobility considerations, things that people were feeling very much in their communities. Also the built environment. Just to give you an example of built environment, there is a park in Flagstaff Sunnyside neighborhood. It's a neighborhood. It's called Ponderosa. And there are two tennis courts. And the only time I've ever seen those tennis courts used were to house the beer garden for the Cinco de Mayo festival. So really looking at whether or not the recreation amenities that we have available for communities are the appropriate ones that the community will use and engage in to recreate and have physical activity. And then finally, policy, just knowing that policy is really going to be so important in making the healthy choice the easy choice in our community. And this is a picture of Sunnyside. So through this process and the voting, we came up with these four goals to a beautiful life, or una hermosa vida. And those are to reduce barriers to accessing resources to engage in healthy behaviors, to change policy to affect conditions that help people lead healthier life styles, increase access to healthy foods, activities, places to recreate. And then another theme that we heard over and over again was that community was really something that we needed to focus on, and building this feeling of community and leveraging this feeling of community in this neighborhood, and really working to promote community through community organizing efforts that could result in community gardening efforts and healthy lifestyles events. These different things were really an important thing to focus on. And these are pictures from our community meetings that looked at engaging folks around the strategies. 5 minutes, okay. So this is what the Hermosa Vida, this is what we presented back to Kresge after the 9 month period. And we said these are the demonstration project. This is what we would like to do in your demonstration project. And we were one of the 8 funded programs that went forward with demonstration projects across the US. And so Hermosa Vida really focuses on creating a beautiful life at the individual, family, community, and policy level. And they do it through these different strategies. So the top strategies are really focused in the school. And I know that this session was around school, and this is really where our school aspect came in. The school in Flagstaff, this particular neighborhood, is also a community center, and it's very much considered the hub of the community, and so it was really easy to focus a lot of our strategies here because everyone in the community comes there for community meetings. There was a hip-hop concert there just recently. So structured physical activity during recess. Michelle did a really nice job about talking about how much the school has limitations about how many instructional hours and that sort of thing. So we had to consider all of those things in implementing our strategies. So once we identified the strategies and worked with the communities to identify them, we really had to work with the school to talk about what was possible. And so structured physical activity during the recess period was one way that we could get in a best practice during a non-instructional time. And adults from the Parks Department, the Parks and Rec Department, come to the school during recess and they do the structured physical activity. We also had free after-school intramural programming that had that was on early release Fridays. So we were resolving some things for families. We had free intramural programming, and it was during an early release day anyway, a time when they had to scramble to find childcare anyway. And so we really tried to work on those issues and build it in. And those were accompanied by parent academies or parent workshops that focus on a healthy lifestyle. We also had a working school bus program, and that really got at those safety and mobility concerns, walking through parks that had inebriates in the park. That was something that we found during our research process, that families really weren't letting their kiddos walk to school, even though this school is made to be a walking neighborhood and made to have families walk to school. And then we also have a school-based produce market, and we give families produce from the local CSA. And then the community strategies, we have a policy coalition. We also have healthy lifestyle events and community gardening. And those are just some of the strategies and how we set it up. So as far as the ripple effects, these are we are halfway through the Kresge demonstration project funding period. So we're a year and a half in. We have another year and a half to go. And so where we find ourselves today, after having implemented all the strategies on the previous slide, we successfully implemented them. We have now come back together, all these partners, and even the unlikely partners that we didn't foresee being partnered with in the process, have come back together. And now is our challenge, because we only have a year and a half left, to really look at where to go from here, what strategies are important to look at. What about the sustainability? And Eric mentioned that some of those things we were able to build into our process, the sustainability on some of the strategies we were able to build in simply because we involved the community so much. But now we really have to be thoughtful about how to work this. So these are some of our lessons learned. The broadened CHC's breadth and depth. So I can tell you that our programs before the Hermosa Vida project came into play were traditionally secondary and tertiary prevention strategies, and all of our programs basically looked at either cancer screening sorts of things or diabetes, managing diabetes or HIV, that sort of thing, and it really didn't look at primary prevention. And so for the very first time, we saw ourselves in a primary prevention role, and then others in the community saw us in a primary prevention role. We also have had a lot of successes around grants. We've had a lot of successes around publishing papers, in particular around the effect of SB 1070 on people engaging in health behaviors, different things like that, and different projects that have rippled out as a result of the Hermosa Vida project. Additionally, expanded relationships with partners. Just this year, we put in a school-based health center and a mobile clinic, just as Dr. Henley was saying, and that is now up and running, and we feel like that's a result of having this relationship and this infrastructure built around Hermosa Vida. The focus on policy, we really hope for this to be a strategy that continues, and we hope that because residents and service providers are now sitting on this policy coalition, so we really hope that the policy coalition moves forward in looking at healthy lifestyle policy and making mindful choices around that. And then we also have to identify, like I said before, those strategies that we'll try to sustain through different funding mechanisms or that sort of thing. Also, lessons learned about the physician-patient communication. We have a lot of learnings from the community around how to address wellness issues in a clinic setting, and we're able to impact them because of some of the programs that Eric talked about. We have 30 undergraduate medical students that work in North Country system, and we also are looking at developing a primary care residency, so we hope to be able to impact curriculum around medical education. Additionally, we have really been thinking and looking more around expanded integration of ways to address the social determinants of health in our CHC. And some of those are the medical legal partnership that Eric mentioned, really focusing on if we could address some of those upstream things, then we could really impact better health outcomes for our populations. Thanks.